my song. Let's sing it. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Come on, it's gonna be freaking awesome. You know the words. It's gonna be freaking awesome. That's it, say. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Yeah!
Oh my goodness. I'm 2 days late on my show. This is the first time this has ever happened. It's another episode of The Coolest Geek Alive, and I'm a little bit behind this week. I've been promoting my show like crazy. I'm actually going on WDW Pro's show on YouTube in a little bit, and I've been going on all sorts of podcasts like Word Balloon and other ones with friends of mine promoting my comic book King of Kings number one, which is live on Kickstarter right now. We've made our initial goal of $5,000, but we still got a lot more to raise and a lot of cool stuff to give out. If you love me and want to help support me and the cool things that I'm doing to try and create a richer and more meaningful and funnier and funner and more quality space of artistic integrity in comic books and in the arts, then please go to Kickstarter right now, type in King of Kings number one, find our campaign and pledge some money to it and get one of our awesome exclusive books. Anyway, I am so annoyed that I was late here on this show because I spent time on Monday working out this entire episode. I was gonna do part three of my career highlights kind of thing, working with Marvel, DC, Archie, the Muppets, Disney, Pixar, all these different companies and what that's been like. But I thought it was time to just kind of break up the monotony of that for a minute, since I did have more to say, to talk about the history of the multiverse. My brother Cody is a brilliant, brilliant filmmaker. In fact, that is your homework assignment for today. Go find Fool's Day, directed by my brother, Cody Blue Snyder, co-written by him and my other brother, Shane Royal Snyder. My brothers are some funny mother effers. You will love their short film. It has been called the greatest short film of all time. Also, if you want to watch some great quality music videos and short films, go online, type in Cody Blue and see what comes up. He also made a short film called All That Remains, which was adapted from a comic book script and some images that me and my buddy Steve Kurth had made, and he was really impressed by. Thank you, Cody, for the love there. And Cody is responsible for bands like Motionless and White blowing up and others having really good showings with their music videos. He is a brilliant, brilliant director. And obviously, I love to brag about him. And the other day he came to me and he was asking me about essentially the history of the multiverse. And I forget what he was crediting to the beginning of the multiverse, but it was something recent. It was like 10 years ago. And he was like, so that's like the beginning of the idea of the multiverse? And no, not at all. You are sorely mistaken, my friend. The multiverse has existed for a long time. And I went into research where it was specifically that these things had come out, because I wasn't sure if I was exactly right, but I at least knew that DC Comics has had a multiverse the way we see it, with slightly alternative versions of different characters in fiction. That sort of multiverse has existed at DC for a long time. And I want to take you guys through today the history of the multiverse and the very concept of the multiverse. Where does it come from? Where did it truly begin? As it turns out, it kind of went in stages. People keep saying, why is everything a multiverse these days? Well, the multiverse is an easy answer for everything. Why is this different? Oh, well, that takes place in the multiverse. It's a slightly different universe than the universe you're used to. It's a real easy thing to say for an executive who doesn't want to spend time reading, you know, 6 decades of Batman comics. They're like, ah, it's the multiverse. And then this is the alternate version of the multiversal version of Batman or Superman. All right, that's cool, but as we know, the multiverse tends to slowly over time dilute your product. And if the multiverse isn't done really well, like in the case of Superman, if you don't define Superman as the ultimate pure good, all the Elseworlds versions of Superman, where he's from Russia and he's got a whole different set of values, it doesn't matter, because we weren't presented with the normal Superman set of values in Man of Steel. So making a Red Sun movie, it doesn't mean anything to us, because it's not a good juxtaposition with the normal Superman versus this new multiversal Superman, which in Superman Red Sun, for example,
features a Russian Superman. What if Superman's rocket crashed in Russia and he wasn't about truth, justice, and the American way? He was about truth, justice, and the Russian way. Wouldn't that be interesting? And it was. So it's very important that you get the things correct the first time before you start diving into the multiversal concept. But today we're just going to talk about some of these things because, you know, right now it's in the news again. The producers of The Witcher, they're losing their actor, Henry Cavill. He was unhappy with the way the books were being adapted. I think a lot of the fans of those Witcher books have been not happy with the way the Witcher TV show has been adapted. The focus not exactly being on The Witcher, who's the character we've shown up to learn about and to follow his stories. But they want to follow the stories of all these other side characters who never really had huge parts in the books. The books are very popular. You're adapting the books. Adapt them accurately. Why don't you? Anyway, why does it keep getting used? It's easy. Executives don't have to bother to learn anything about the history of an intellectual property. So what is the history of the concept of the multiverse? Where did it begin? So the concept has a complex and interesting history that deals with scientific theories, philosophical speculation, and most importantly, fiction, especially comic books. First, you got the ancient Vedas, which explored the possibility of multiple realms and planes of existence through the concept of the lokas and kalpas, which basically describes the process of reincarnation through birth, life, death, and rebirth. They also talk about layers of alternative dimensions that the various gods of that culture inhabit. Secondly, the idea of multiple worlds or parallel realities was raised again in Greece by ancient philosophers like Anaximander and Democritus, who thought there might be other worlds or universes just beyond the veil of our own, but this was just speculation about the possibility that other worlds could be living right on top of ours, just a dimension away. And how would we even know? But these ideas were not grounded in any scientific principles. It was just sort of speculation, like when people speculate that maybe Bigfoot is disappearing into an alternate dimension, and then he's popping out of it when he wants to go gardening in the woods or whatever. There's not a lot of scientific basis for these ideas that, hey, if there was another dimension that we just couldn't perceive, how would we know it was there? The answer is we wouldn't. Thirdly, the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. And now this was proposed by physicist Hugh Everett III in 1957. Okay, so this is where we actually get into the multiverse that we think of as a multiverse. Everett said, any quantum event would cause the universe to split into multiple branches, with each branch representing a different outcome. Your choices, every one of them, create branches of possibilities that create a whole new world. Did you go right or did you go left? There are now two unique worlds, one where you did what you did, and another that goes on without you, where an alternative version of yourself continues on your alternative path. This has finally gained popularity among physicists as a way to explain the behavior of particles on a quantum level. Now, on a science fiction influence level, the first instance of parallel worlds and alternative realities is often credited to Philip K. Dick with the book The Man in the High Castle. This book explores the concept of multiple realities, famously depicting an alternative Earth where the Nazis won World War II, and features within its pages a fictional novel about an alternative universe within this alternative universe where the Nazis had lost, which gives the people of this alternative reality hope for a better future in their alternate reality. But I'm afraid DC Comics beat Philip K. Dick to the punch by a full year. The concept of the multiverse that contains slightly different versions of the same characters like we see in Into the Spider-Verse, or Everything Everywhere All at Once, was actually introduced by DC Comics a year earlier in 1961 by writer Gardner Fox and illustrator Carmine Infantino in the pages of The Flash number 123, where the Golden Age Flash, Jay Garrick, the dude with the bowl on his head from Earth 2, met the Silver Age Flash, Barry Allen from Earth 1, featuring one of the most classic and iconic covers of all time, the two alternative Flashes split by a brick wall, both of them rushing to save the same man who's about to be crushed by a giant girder on a building site. I'm sure you've seen that image of the two Flashes racing and they're neck and neck, both trying to save the same guy, but they can't even see that they're both trying to save the same guy because they're on the other side of this brick wall. They actually turned the image into an excellent statue many years ago now that you can probably find online somewhere. Really cool. Anyway, the story was even titled The Flash of Two Worlds. Right? This establishes the idea of multiple parallel universes within the DC Comics universe specifically, but moreover, it introduces the concept of the multiverse as we know it today on planet Earth. The Flash was an early invention of DC Comics, but the earlier version of that Flash, Jay Garrick, I guess was deemed as a little passé, and they decided to update the concept years later with Barry Allen, who now people know from the Ezra Miller version of the Flash in the films, well, the people who saw it, even though that Ezra Miller version of Barry Allen isn't really exactly Barry Allen. Or you might know Barry from the excellent TV show, which my daughter Logan is a huge fan of, starring, I think, Grant Gustin. But this idea of Barry Allen Flash meeting Jay Garrick Flash, who had been established in different worlds as the only Flash in both of their worlds, coming together and meeting each other for the first time, this is the beginning of the multiverse. And I'm so proud that comics get to take responsibility for this idea being entered into science fiction, because it's a great concept. And while the multiverse is sometimes mishandled or overused, it is a very interesting way to tell stories and introduce alternative versions of ideas that people already know and love and create great juxtaposition between the way it is and the way it could have been. Really. I mean, I'm just so proud to say that the intellectually respected fictional novels were beaten to the punch by this concept of the multiverse by lowly old comic books. And I know it's just this silly thing where we needed to cross this over and this didn't make sense with this, and okay, well, there's multiverses to explain it. But it is a really high-level intellectual concept and layered idea about the way the universe works. A concept that really expands the mind to think about. Have you ever seen that interesting movie with Gwyneth Paltrow, Sliding Doors? Of, if I go right, if I go left? There are so many interesting stories to tell if you use the multiverse correctly to inform us further about the way it is, by showing us other ways that it could be. Another early invention of the multiverse is It's a Wonderful Life, one of my favorite films of all time. What would the world be like without George Bailey? Not as wonderful. But comic books did it first. And I'm just so proud of our medium because of it. Not only that, they were the first to explore these concepts in lots of different ways as the years went on. So, you know, in 61, you've got the Flash of two worlds, the two Flashes meeting each other. But shortly after that, in 64, we get introduced to the Crime Syndicate of America. The Crime Syndicate come from an alternate reality where all of the good characters from the DC Universe are evil, and all of the evil characters from the DC Universe are good. This concept was later used in Star Trek when they were adventuring into the Mirror Universe, and you get that Spock with the twirly mustache and all these alternative versions of the people in Star Trek who are generally shown to be really good people. But not in the Mirror Universe. In the Mirror Universe, the Federation and the crew of the U.S. Enterprise, they suck. They suck. And they've journeyed into that Mirror Universe many times in the Star Trek mythology. And I'm sure they will journey into it many more times because it's such a great and simple concept. The idea that there's another universe next door where all the good guys are bad guys. Where all the bad guys are good guys. And in the Crime Syndicate of America, the good guy of their universe is the bad guy of Superman's universe. It's Lex Luthor. There's a good Lex Luthor, and there's a really evil Batman called Owlman, and there's a really evil Superman called Ultraman. And when Superman is depicted properly as the ultimate good, Ultraman is the ultimate evil. These concepts are just wonderful juxtaposition, playing off of the concept that we already know and love, and then we got a complete opposite version that gets to invade our reality from this multiverse of possibilities. In 68, we got the Meta Earth Prime. This is interesting. In the comics, they introduced Earth Prime as a concept where it was supposed to be real Earth. Our Earth is Earth Prime, and superheroes from the DC Universe would enter into Earth Prime and interact with people like you and me who are like, I read about your stories in the comic books. And the superheroes are like, wait, we're a comic book in your universe? This is so weird and meta. And very cool for the readers to essentially see themselves in a DC comic. Hey, it's me. It's a fan of Superman meeting Superman after believing him to be a fictional character for all these years, but not in the multiverse. In the multiverse, there's room for Superman to be real, and there's room for us to be real, even within the continuity of DC Comics. That's pretty cool. Yeah, another interesting use of the multiverse. Now, moving ahead, eventually in 82 and 83, and I can't think of another place where this was done, but you've got the Zoo Crew, who are introduced as a team of anthropomorphic animals who are kind of loosely based on members of the Justice League as well. So this is an alternate universe in the multiverse that includes animal versions of our superheroes. And it's not direct relation, you know, Captain Carrot isn't Superman, but he's very much like Superman. And there are other characters on the team who are all essentially amalgams or send-ups to various classic characters, but in this universe, they're animals of different varieties. So the multiverse expands into this concept of, well, what if these people weren't people? What if they were animals of various varieties? Finally, in 85, 86, you've got Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was the one that I mentioned to my brother Cody when he asked me about the multiverse. I was like, wow, no, way, way back in the 80s, they did Crisis on Infinite Earths. And for those of you who don't know what Crisis on Infinite Earths is, I think I've talked about it a little bit before. It is really the concept that is kind of waiting to be adapted in live action by DC. They could fix all of their film problems tomorrow if they did a really good adaptation of Crisis on Infinite Earths, where they did basically the movie equivalent of what they did in the comics. At the time, all of the characters of the DC universe essentially lived in their own universe. They did not share continuity. Continuity means basically if something happens in Spider-Man's universe, you're going to see some sort of reflection of it eventually in the Fantastic Four universe or in the Avengers universe, because they're all living in the same space. So anything that happens in one book on some level or another will eventually creep into the stories of the other characters in the other comic books that they're publishing that all share this singular continuity. But originally, DC didn't want to deal with any of that. So Superman was doing his own thing, and the JSA, they were doing their own thing. These characters from the 1940s, you know, who were participating in World War II, but they lived in their own universe, as did the Charleston characters that were bought, characters like Blue Beetle and The Question. They lived in their own universe with Captain Atom. So did Shazam, originally called Captain Marvel, who had been published by Fawcett Comics, and now he was owned by DC Comics, and they wanted Shazam to be able to interact with Superman. But the only way that's going to happen, unless we're going to do one of those multiversal crossovers, is if we fix the continuity so that they all live on the same planet. Or more specifically, on the same planet, because they did live on the same planet, but within the same universe, where their continuity is shared, where the President of the United States in Superman is the same President of the United States in Captain Marvel, where anything that happens in Superman that's major, you know, in The Tick, classically Chairface Chippendale carves C-H-E-H on the moon, chuh. And, you know, it's always there when you look up at the moon. Well, if The Tick is in the DC universe, that means in Superman, every time you look up at the moon, it says, chuh. Every time you read Captain Marvel, it says, chuh. Because they all now live in this same universe where the moon has been damaged in this very specific way. But now, as Crisis on Infinite Earths happened, all of these characters who lived in different universes, their universes were crushed into one place to be more like Marvel Comics, where everybody essentially lived in New York City and everybody's story was slightly affecting other stories. But DC, they never had the benefit of that shared space universe, and this Crisis on Infinite Earth story changed all of that. It finally brought all these characters to the same spot. And essentially, it's from that moment on in Crisis of Infinite Earths when we have the DC universe that we know and love today, where the characters were sort of adjusted to take all the best stories and all the best parts of their continuity in their own individual titles and amalgamize it into something that fit together with everything and was not contradicting itself within their newly shared universe. So Crisis on Infinite Earths was what I pointed to for my brother, but the reality was it was Flash 123 where Jay and Barry met for the first time. That was really where it started, and that was actually like 20 years earlier. What is it, 61 to 82, 85, 86? So yeah, even more than that. It's a lot of time before Crisis on Infinite Earths. So the multiverse had existed long, long before that. Now, apparently, before the Barack Obama-inspired Black Superman of recent decades came about, the concept of a race-swapped universe was introduced in 1988 with Earth-D in Superman Volume 2, Number 23, where Superman's rocket crashes in Africa, and I guess he's depicted as being a dark-skinned guy in the book, and who he got raised in Africa. And while I've never read those books, so I don't know if it's a fully race-swapped universe or it's just a Superman being race-swapped, this, as far as I can tell, seems to be the beginning of an idea of an alternate universe where people are different races than they were in the normal universe. Now, in 1989, writer Brian Augustin and artist Mike Mignola, they introduced the concept of the Elseworld with Batman operating in the 19th century in a book called Gotham by Gaslight. And he's facing off against historical serial killer Jack the Ripper. Very cool. Batman going up against Jack the Ripper. It's got this old school aesthetic because he's in 19th century Gotham, not in modern day Gotham. So the book looks really beautiful. It played up Mike Mignola's style that he really loved to have. He's got a really cool goth style. If you've ever read any of those Hellboy comic books, they're awesome. Anyway, this began Elseworlds as a brand. And Elseworlds are some of the greatest stories DC has ever done. One of my favorites is a book called Justice League, The Nail. And basically, it explores the concept of what is the Justice League without Superman. In the comic books, unlike the recent films, Superman is portrayed as just the greatest of all the superheroes. And I don't mean that by like, he's the best at what he does. I mean, he's got the best heart, the biggest heart. He always is searching for a better way to handle things than just beating people up, because he's the best at beating people up. He's the strongest and the fastest. He's got all the powers, and he's constantly basically shortchanging his own abilities to try to do it better, to come up with a better way forward, not to just kill people and sweep them under the rug, but to try and save the day without going to this terrible place of violence that a character like the Punisher would go to, or brutality like Batman or Daredevil would go to. Superman always finds a better way. Well, without the moral compass of the DC Universe, what is the Justice League like? And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, people would tell you about the vampire Batman. I told you about Russian Superman. Recently, you've had Deceased, which is a zombie universe where all the DC characters are undead. You've got the Injustice universe where Lois Lane gets killed by the Joker and Superman goes nuts. That's a great one. And there's plenty more. They've done a lot with the Elseworlds concept over the years. James Gunn finally even brought up the Elseworlds concept when talking about the future films that he's going to be making in the DC Cinematic Universe. Elseworlds are fun, baby. Really fun. But the important thing when it comes to Elseworlds is that you have established a baseline. And, you know, what I mean is you have to have a tried and true personality and morality for the main characters of the DC Universe, your Superman and your Batman, because then it's all about how they differ in the Elseworlds. And if you don't nail the way they are depicted usually in the prime DC Universe, which is, you know, Earth 1, then it doesn't work. It doesn't work when you make an Elseworlds book. You know, if you made a Superman, like an Injustice Superman, it doesn't mean anything in the face of Man of Steel Superman, where the movie ends with him breaking Zod's neck. The moment he is willing to go to that place, it just creates so much space in your mind for the fact that he'll go there again. He will probably go there again. And here, there in the comics, they have told those stories, but they always basically walk back on that and bring him back to a moral center where he's not going around just killing people. There's always a better way. And if you haven't established your character that way, doing an Elseworlds where he's significantly different doesn't matter. Doing Justice League The Nail where he's not there, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He's not the moral linchpin of the DC universe. So him not being there doesn't create any interesting stories. It just is a world without Superman, but it doesn't mean anything. A world without Superman in the DC universe that's been created in the comics really means something because he is important as the moral compass of the entire superhero community. Quick aside, I didn't actually look this up, but now that I'm thinking about it at the time, there was various stories where the Justice League were turned into gorillas or were showing up as gorillas because the editors at the time, I think it was Julius Schwartz, he believed that gorillas on the cover, he noticed that they sold more books with gorillas on the cover. So there was a while when the Justice League would show up as gorillas and gorillas were always on the books. And I don't know if it was ever alternate universe versions of them as gorillas, even though often that's what it looked like. I always read it as them being transformed into gorillas, but I don't know. Write me a letter at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com if you know the history there of the Justice League as gorillas and some of those stories, and if there is an anthropomorphic area of the multiverse that had included these characters as animals before the Zoo Crew, because I'm not entirely sure. Back to finish up the conversation about the Elseworlds stories with just a couple more. Superman's Kingdom Come, that's that book painted by Alex Ross. That's a great one. Another Elseworlds that's just amazing. And I mean, that's kind of the future, but it's a really dark future. There's also a great one that's been happening recently with some Harley Quinn in it, some other really cool characters and character designs, which is Batman White Knight. That's a really fun one. Wonder Woman Amazonia is really great. JLA Destiny, I've heard great things about. I never read that one myself. And Green Lantern, 1001 Emerald Knights. I haven't read that one either. I hear that one's really good. Anyway, Elseworlds are great stories to get into if you're not a day-to-day comic book reader, because you can just jump into those things to a certain degree and they're all self-contained within their own pages. But it's that much better when you know how the characters are usually depicted, what the book is usually like, because every change is essentially a little Easter egg and a little wink to you as an audience member that things have been altered very specifically for specific reasons by somebody who understands the character that you like, and he's making or she's making those changes for specific reasons to demonstrate the great change it would be if one or another circumstance was different than it is in the mainstream continuity of the books. I highly recommend these Elseworlds books. Anyway, in 2003, Earth 11 was introduced, where we had the reverse genderverse. The reverse genderverse is just all the characters are girls if they're boys or boys if they're girls. Very simple, but again, another play on this multiverse. And in recent years, one of my favorite current artists of the day, Juan Gideon, has been drawing an alternative universe version of the Jurassic Park. I mean, not of the Jurassic Park. An alternate universe version of the Justice League called the Jurassic League, where they're all dinosaurs. So, I mean, we've really come full circle to think that there's all these different ways and interpretations of these characters in just a dimension away, parallel to our own. Here I am, it's Jesse Blaze Snyder doing Coolest Geek Alive, but I am a Triceratops dinosaur. How cool is that? Just to think of, just to imagine that there may be all of these alternate universes where you look a little different, where you're a different sex, where you're an anthropomorphic animal, you know, or versions of you that were named a different name. You know, my parents were going to name me Angel. There's probably a different universe where I'm Angel Blaze Snyder. And I'm like, hey, it's me, Angel Blaze Snyder, the coolest geek alive. Really interesting concepts to think about. As we start to get into sort of quantum mechanics and the suggestion that the reality that we live in may actually be a very complex virtual reality, a virtual space, and that essentially we're all living in this giant computer that some people like to call God. Well, if you're taking that interpretation that way, isn't it simple and possible that anything that you do or don't do, God or the AI computer that is basically creating this simulation, it can think of infinite versions of alternative realities where you go the opposite way or you look slightly different or your name is different, whatever it might be, just infinitely. shroom, you know, just out of curiosity to see what it's like, just so that it can know everything, because it's a computer just trying to, and it can think infinitely, so why wouldn't it? It probably just did already, it probably couldn't even help itself, it's probably just thinking forever, and that's why the infinity even exists in the first place. It's just the mind run rampant, and it just can't stop coming up with new things to think about. If there's one thing I've learned for certain as I've become a spiritual man and I've had lots of really weird experiences throughout my life, is that there is an infinity. This consciousness, this concept, the mind goes on for forever. Anything that can be thought is thunk. We here living with time, you know, the concept of time is a concept. What came first, the chicken or the egg? The idea for the chicken, the idea for the egg. Idea comes before form. So on that level, on the dimension of our minds, where we are just thinking things, we can think of things forever. And the fact that the ideas exist in our mind tends to suggest to me that they must, on some level, exist outside of our minds, perhaps in other dimensions. And man, what a cool concept to explore. And honestly, we've got comics to thank for its proliferation. And we've got comics to thank for the easy band-aid that it is to say, oh, it's the multiverse, when these producers get tongue-tied because they didn't do their research. So the multiverse is a really, really cool thing that was essentially invented by comic books and comic book creators. And we got to thank comic books for introducing this great concept, because if not, we wouldn't have all these wonderful films like Into the Spider-Verse or this Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire, Tom Holland, and Andrew Garfield all together mixing all these things. I mean, honestly, there's a lot more I'd like to see done with the multiverse the right way. I would have loved to see Dr. Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, I've talked about this before, where he visited Johnny Blaze in the Ghost Rider movies starring Nicolas Cage, where he visited Wesley Snipes in the Blade movies starring Wesley Snipes. Those ways of mixing and matching some of these characters that we would have loved to have seen mixed and matched yesterday, but we never got a chance to do it. Now, Marvel could do that. They own all of those old films again. They own these concepts. They have them back under their own roof. So why not cross them over, give us a satisfying conclusion to some of those universes, and then move us into a new one? I highly recommend that if James Gunn or any of his people are listening, dude, do Crisis on Infinite Earths. It'll solve all your problems. Bring back everybody. Bring back Jonah Hex. You know, even the worst movies that you did, if you bring them all and acknowledge and honor that they exist, and then give us a better version that is more in line with the books we've been reading for forever, I promise you, we are not going to reject it. Seriously, we'll be glad to see Catwoman in that disgusting outfit you had her in. What was her name again? She wasn't even freaking Catwoman. But we want to see that she exists in the multiverse, put that shit to bed, and then give us a real Selena Kyle, goddammit. Seriously, everything is on the table if you handle it correctly. And you would make fans so happy. And that's the history of the multiverse. If you got anything to add to that that would be cool to add, write me at jesseblaze@jessesnyder.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm CoolestGeekJBS on Twitter. And actually, I'm just going to do, instead of in lieu of letter this week, I'm just going to do somebody who had written to me on Twitter, because it was a very nice message. Julian James wrote, mowed through the back catalog of Coolest Geek JBS podcast. JBS knows his stuff. Love the Man of Steel and the Flash reviews and agree with your point of view. Would have been cool if Cage Soups was the one in the Russian scrotum. Would make sense for the Burtonverse too. Yes, it would. That's the thing. Doing these multiverses right, if you're going to go visit Michael Keaton in the universe, there was a planned addition to that universe where Tim Burton was going to direct his own Superman movie, and it was going to be Nicolas Cage. They show you Nicolas Cage through one of these portals opening up, but it would have made far more sense for Nicolas Cage to have come out of that prison and for that movie to have ended with Bruce Wayne of the Tim Burton universe and the Clark Kent of the Tim Burton universe, played by Nicolas Cage and Michael Keaton, meeting up and going, hey, Maybe we should see if there's more people like us on Earth.
Right? How exciting would that have been if you actually got to see that Tim Burton verse come to life? We were promised it. There were lots of fans who were promised and waiting for that great, interesting, dark kind of Superman take from Tim Burton's eyes, and we never got it. And to fulfill that fantasy, to bring that to life, that would have been meaningful. That is a good use of the multiverse. By bringing that female Supergirl, well, that doesn't exactly jibe with the continuity. It's creating a brand new continuity that they just decided, oh, it's the multiverse, and this multiverse is a girl Superman instead of that. But wait, you guys already did have an idea for Superman in that universe, and it was Nicolas Cage. Man, that would have been cool. That is proper use of the multiverse.
And by the way, you did hear me right. I did say scrotum. That's what he wrote in the tweet. I'm not sure if scrotum is, it doesn't seem like it's the Russian word for a prison. I don't know if it was a typo. It seems like the AI text predicting is getting worse and worse by the day in my life. I don't know about you, but yeah, he wrote scrotum, but I wasn't sure if he was right, and I'm just ignorant to the fact that, I don't know, maybe that prison that that girl came out of was the scrotum. As far as I knew, the scrotum was like a part of the penis. Sorry about that. I didn't know what to edit it to. But that was what he wrote in the message. Sometimes I do typos as well. So sorry if I'm misrepresenting your tweet to me, but I appreciate you tweeting at me. I appreciate the kind words. And it was very appropriate what you were talking about in this conversation about the history of the multiverse. So I decided I wanted to read it out. So thanks for writing. And please write me on Twitter at CoolestGeekJBS. Write me an email, jesseblaze at jessesnyder.com. Whatever it may be, I want to hear from you. Anyway, it's me, your boy, Jesse Blaze Snyder. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for coming back week in, week out. I'm sorry I was a little bit late this week. It has been a crazy, crazy week for me. I'm actually about to go on to WDW Pro's show on YouTube. I'm so excited. I love him. He's such a sweet guy. I'm a big Disney fan. He's a huge Disney fan and a big-hearted dude. And yesterday I was on Film Threat for their Disney Star Wars on Trial. I did a bunch of impressions of C-3PO and Rian Johnson and who else did I do? I did Mickey Mouse, and then I got to come on a little bit as myself, too. The Film Threat Disney Star Wars on Trial has been amazing. So many fans have said that it was very cathartic, and I believe that that's true. Chris Gore's idea behind the whole thing is to sort of open up conversation a little bit and have people really discuss these films and these properties in a more meaningful way than the discourse, the way it goes on online, which is awful and ugly most of the time. But it's been lovely and fun on Film Threat's channel. So if you're a YouTuber like me, subscribe to Film Threat and go check me out on the Disney Star Wars on Trial. And you'll probably be able to catch me on WDW Pro's show. He does like a Thursday show. I forget what the damn show is called. But every Thursday he does his thing. And I'm going on there today in just a couple minutes. I actually have to go right now so I can do it. But I love you guys. Next week, I'm going to be talking about my career, getting into my experience writing The Muppets. Oh my God, it was not good. It was not good. I've only ever told these stories to other professionals in the comics field. I'm really excited to talk about it to you all next week on another fabulous episode of The Coolest Geek Alive! You've been listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Coolest Alive. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Stay with your tribe. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Revenge of the Geeks. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Week after weeks. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Laughing with you. And crowds sometimes do. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Spilling it out. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Making you shout. I'm a genius. I got lyrics coming out me bum for days. Awesome. Talking some shit. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Living the
You'll all see.